I'm so thrilled, Kylie, about our new sponsor. It's a brand called Go With Ease, and the founder behind it, Christy, is such a gem.
The product is just as good as the person who created it, and
Yeah.
vice versa.
True story.
What Christy and her team have created here, guys, is this little handheld device, and it uses acupressure points in your abdomen. And there are two different sets of points. One of them is even called the poop button.
I love
And
that.
so, what these two different points help with is relieving things like bloating, gas, constipation, menstrual cramps. It is a wonderful solution, a wonderful tool that doesn't require you to change anything. It doesn't
No.
require any extra time other than the 1 to 3 minutes that you actually use it to press into these pressure points, right?
Yep.
You don't have to take a supplement. You don't have to do a test. You can take it with you when you're traveling. Meg, how many people do you know have a hard time with
Oh.
constipation when traveling?
Oh my God, so much. So many. I just experienced it myself too. I traveled recently and I was a little off and it was, I really wish I had ease.
Yes,
Truly.
absolutely. It would fit in a suitcase super easily. It's just the size of your hand. You guys can learn more about the actual pressure points and the science behind this by visiting gowithease.com/curiouswomen. And you can use Curious Women at checkout to get a discount for your own Go With Ease tool.
Well, she is just a doll. I'm so happy we had a chance to pick her brain about sleep.
I mean, sleep is one of those things where it's almost hard to know what the question that you're trying to ask is because it's you're so involved with your own sleep, but you're asleep. So it's really tricky unless you have somebody around you who can give you actual feedback about what they're witnessing you do in your sleep. It is really hard to catch. And I felt like she really did a great job of explaining these are some questions that you can ask yourself. These are some things that you can look for. And then based on how you answer those things, here are a bunch of different things that you can do. And Meg, how about the fact that we learned about so many different treatments?
Oh my God, so many. This episode, I would have loved to have more time to really pick her brain more about like what comes first as far as getting your sleep hygiene and a lot of those tips and tricks. But I think it was really good for a first episode on sleep that we at least got a lot of information about what the potential treatment options are out there because there was so much I didn't know. And my husband has sleep apnea, so I've been through so much of it with like for with him. I can't, yeah,
That
really
part of the
surprising.
conversation was really cool. It was really informative. And I think, I mean, we said this as well with Teresa that sleep apnea is one of those things that there's a lot of feelings around for people, and it really prevents them from getting to a place where they can get some help for it. So
Totally.
anyway, you guys, a terrific intro to sleep, and I love how Teresa explains it. Is it sleep or something else? So take a listen and decide for yourself, is it your sleep or something else?
So, Teresa, do you have anything fun that you're drinking today?
Oh my gosh, no, I totally forgot.
That's okay. What
Okay,
did
we're
you
done
drink?
here. See you guys.
Bye.
Oh my goodness. You know, I had a webinar right before, but like, I'm interested. Which one do we have?
Meg, what are you drinking?
What are you drinking?
I'm just being boring today. I got myself a very large coffee and almond milk. Nope, this is oat milk. And then I have water with me too. I'm not going to drink this entire thing though. I would be, do you know how hyper I would be if I finished this?
Meg on caffeine is a very special experience. And I mean that. We should all, everybody should have it, you know, at least once.
I'm the worst on it. I only drink tea, which has like less caffeine typically, and I only drink it in the morning. I think I had like one full cup of coffee ever, and I like broke out in hives, and I was like running circles. So, yeah. So I'd
I can't
probably be
wait
the
to talk about
worst.
caffeine, actually.
I know. Oh my God, me either. Kylie, what are you drinking?
I guess it looks like a can of Coke, which you would never catch me with, but it's Olipop. They didn't
Oh,
really advertise it that
cute.
way.
Yay.
This
That's
is their
so cute.
new cherry cola one, which is
That sounds
fabulous.
delicious.
Oh my God. Have you ever had Olipop?
I haven't seen that one though. I feel like I get one that's in like a peach colored can.
Kylie knows them all.
We are not sponsored by Olipop, but we may as well be.
They should be.
I do is talk about Olipop, honestly.
It's Olipop, oh my gosh, if you're listening, hit us up.
Yeah, for real.
She opens a closet door. It's like, call Olipop.
Kylie's dungeon of Olipop.
Totally normal. Very normal.
Listen, we've already got a distribution center and a gym in this apartment. We're going to have to wait until we have a bigger space to indulge this particular dream, okay?
I personally cannot wait. I cannot wait until the day you get a dungeon space for your Olipop.
Yeah, I can't.
Sounds like a blast.
It's just around the corner. Brian just said yesterday, we should order some more. Let's get the cream soda. Let's get the Dr. Pepper one. I've got a support system for my most expensive habit. And not because it's like too expensive, but because we buy it all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh my gosh. That's so
anyway.
Funny.
Oh my gosh. You guys, we are chatting today about, I honestly am surprised that it's taken us this long to get to this topic.
Yeah.
Sleep.
We were trying to find, it took us a while to find somebody that we really wanted to bring onto the show for this specific thing. So I'm so excited to have you here, Teresa. Like it's, as Kylie said, it's been a journey to find.
That makes me feel even more special. Thanks.
You are special. You're so special. This episode's, I'm so excited.
So special already.
Yeah.
It's so special. Teresa, why don't you go ahead and actually tell us who you are and what type of work you do? And then Meg and I are going to dive into some questions.
Perfect. So I'm Teresa. I'm the founder of Sleep Better NYC, which is a company for sleep coaching and medical care coordination. I have my board certification in clinical sleep health. My background has actually always been working with physicians, although I am not a physician myself. I am a healthcare professional, but you know, I've been working in sleep for so many years and working with patients and working with doctors who have patients. And I realized that there wasn't really a lot of time and there wasn't a lot of information being shared with these people. And then as soon as, you know, people were finding out that I was in the sleep field, it seemed like everybody had questions. And so I'm realizing all these people didn't even become patients yet. They have all these questions. You know, it's everywhere. Just like you guys, you know, nutritionists, obviously everybody sleeps, everybody sleeps, but it's just like so many people don't do it well. And there was just this incredible need. So now I am sleep coaching full time. Again, I do work with patients still, but so that it's more accessible for everybody. I've created some online courses. Obviously, you guys have seen my Instagram. I'm really just there to like spread awareness and get education and information out there to help clear the clutter from some of the crazy nonsense that's out there. So that is my goal in life, really just to help educate and spread awareness about sleep and mental health and sleep disorders if you actually have one of those.
Yeah. You know what I like how you said, because Meg and I have said this before, you have to sleep. That's not an option. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you are in a position where you're not doing it well, which that makes it sound like a skill, but I suppose in some ways it can be a skill, sleeping well. And if that is something that's been an issue for you, you're really in a bad spot because it's not like, oh, it's okay if I don't throw a baseball really well.
Yes.
That's not really life-threatening, you know?
Yes.
I mean, some may argue otherwise, but point being, you know, it does impact mental health. Your gut, it impacts everything, right? So I like that you bring that up. So, oh my God, Meg, where should we even start with this?
I mean, I'm looking at my coffee and I'm like, let's start with caffeine.
Yeah.
That seems like a good place to start. It's like super relatable, common.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say to both our coffee drinkers and our non-coffee drinkers about, well, because we know caffeine isn't only in coffee, right? So even if you don't drink coffee, you're still probably consuming caffeine somehow, whether it's through tea or chocolate or something like that. So can you tell us a little bit about how caffeine and in what amounts if there's a specific cutoff that can mess with your sleep, or if that's the case, like what are we doing here with caffeine? What's the deal? What should we be doing?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So caffeine is definitely the most used stimulant, I believe, on the planet. You know, maybe I'm wrong with that, but I'm going to say on the whole planet. You know, it feels like everybody's drinking coffee. There are whole lifestyles and like brands built around coffee, right? But caffeine, we think of using it to stay awake even when we're studying or we're doing some late night activity. We're like, oh, we have to have this caffeine. And the truth is that it doesn't keep you more awake as much as it prevents you from feeling sleepy, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things is sort of the same thing. But if we're really thinking about the science behind it, caffeine binds to adenosine, and adenosine is what makes people feel sleepiness. And so when it's binding to this, it's making you so that you don't feel that sleepiness. Now, adenosine still exists and it builds up. So if you, for example, had a really rough night and you drink a giant cup of coffee in the morning, you still have that adenosine and it's building up all day, but you're just blocking it. So by the time the day ends, you know, people think of this caffeine crash, but really not even crashing from the caffeine. It's just that suddenly the caffeine has worn off and you have all this adenosine that has built up during the day. And now you're so tired because you haven't felt it all during the day.
Wow.
That's fascinating. So the mechanism is actually much different than than the words that people use to describe the way that caffeine mm-hmm. works does not actually match the mechanism that's happening. It's not that caffeine is keeping you awake. I mean, I get what you're saying. In a sense, it is the same thing. Like the end result mm-hmm. ends up being very similar, but it's not because it's doing something. It's blocking something.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And again, I like, you know, what's your main goal? Like, does that matter to most people? I guess it sort of does if you're wondering, like, why are you feeling this crash? Or if you think, oh, I don't drink caffeine because I feel a crash. Well, really, the truth is that you're already tired. You're just preventing yourself from feeling that way. So, you know, some people do get other feelings. You know, we talked about being jittery, or some people feel really hot. I always get like very flushed if I have too much. And those are all separate things. But they're, again, the mechanism is different. It's unrelated to the actual adenosine blocking. It's more that it's allowing your blood vessels to open up a little bit. Some people say that it's thermogenic. It might make you feel a little bit warm. But yeah, if you're having those feelings, there is actually, again, I drink a lot of tea, things like L-theanine when added to drinks that have caffeine. That can help sort of alleviate that uncomfortable, jittery feeling.
Wow. What was that? What is it that you add?
L-theanine.
It's
primarily in teas. I guess you could take a supplement for it. I don't know where it naturally occurs, but I besides tea. So I'm just going to assume it's only in that or in supplements.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's cool. Good to know.
So I have a question about caffeine and sleep. I'm the type of person who I could drink coffee right before I go to bed, and I do not perceive, I'll put it this way, I don't perceive that it has any impact on me. I don't have a harder time falling asleep. It doesn't bother me. I'm not up until all hours of the night. My family and I, that's how we've always done that. And then I know a lot of people, I mean, Teresa, I think you're one of them, right? Mm-hmm, you can't drink caffeine, either a lot of it at all, or if it's like after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you are not going mm-hmm. to sleep. So I wonder, how much does caffeine actually impact your sleep? Even if you are a person like what I'm describing myself as, where you don't think you feel it, is there actually an impact, even though you don't maybe recognize it?
Yes, and that's such a great question. I was just speaking about this before we got on a call today. I think just that you're recognizing that it's a little unusual is super important too. Caffeine, again, it is a chemical. We're putting it in our bodies. It affects us as humans. Like, we're all humans. It's going to affect us. Now, of course, we all know that you can get used to it. We know those people who have like 4 cups of coffee. You sort of get this tolerance to it, or some people do anyway. You know, my husband likes to drink espresso when we go out to dinner, and I'm like, I can't even think about espresso. I'll never sleep. But it does impact you. It just impacts people in different ways. So the typical half-life for caffeine in the human body is 4 to 6 hours. So maybe you can fall asleep right away. You know, people like to challenge me all the time, and they're like, that doesn't make sense. I can fall asleep right away. I'm like, I don't doubt you. That's probably true.
Right.
And especially if you don't have anxiety or a lot of racing thoughts, if you don't have any sleep trouble, then you know what? Honestly, it's not so bad. If you can sleep, then you're sleeping, right? But again, caffeine is a chemical and it affects our brains no matter what if we're humans. So you might not be getting the right depth of sleep. You might not be getting to all the right stages of sleep. Maybe you're in and out of, you know, if you're in deep sleep, but maybe you're kind of bouncing back and forth between light sleep and deep sleep. So sure, you're sleeping. I would assume that you might have to use the bathroom a little bit more frequently. Again, if you do that once or twice a night, totally fine. But if you realize that you're only doing that when you're drinking caffeine before night, you know, you might as well reduce it in some way. Mostly it's going to be the depth of your sleep and staying in those deeper stages of sleep that's going to be impacted no matter what.
Hmm. Okay. So even if you are a person out there who resonates with what I'm saying about being able to drink it and not be impacted, it might actually be impacting you. Us, even if we don't know it. Okay, that brings me to another, I think maybe we should have started here. Is there a picture of, quote, perfect sleep?
Good question.
There a way to sleep ideally or optimally? Like, is there a certain number of hours? Is it super individualized? Is there like a temperature? Is there blah, 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 all of these things? Go ahead and share. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great question and sort of, I feel like a lot of times when people ask me questions, I am sort of vague. I'm like, yes and no. But because sleep is very individualized and a lot of the way we feel physically and mentally about sleep can be very subjective, although it can also be measured objectively, there is a way to be sleeping better. So a lot of the habits and the tips and tricks, those are called sleep hygiene. And if you have good sleep hygiene, if you don't have a sleep disorder, then typically you sleep very, very well. So human adults need about 7 to 9 hours of sleep. And a lot of times when I give webinars on that, I can almost feel the people like rolling their eyes at that. Like, yeah, right. I'm not getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Like, I'm so busy. But again, we're just wired this way. It's totally possible for us to function on 6 hours, but it's not possible for us to optimize our function on 6 hours. It's not possible for us to be our best. It's just not the way we're wired. So 7 to 9 hours, you know, sometimes people say 8 hours. I think that's really just a generalization. I personally am around 7 to 7.5 hours and I can wake up feeling fine. But again, if you're sleeping 9 hours, if you're lucky enough to have that time, that can be normal too. It is good to typically have a lower temperature in your bedroom, or at least to not wear fabrics or have a mattress that's holding in your heat, because our body temperature does need to drop a little bit to fall asleep and stay asleep. So that would imply that you're a good sleeper. And, you know, I just mentioned before, if you get up once or twice throughout the night, that's totally normal. You know, I think that some people freak out when they wake up and they think that they're, you know, they're developing insomnia or they get anxiety, they're not going to be able to fall back asleep. And it's really important to know that we all wake up throughout the night. You know, a lot of times we totally forget it and that's totally normal. I would say waking up 1 to maybe 3 times a night is normal, but anything more than that is not.
Yeah.
So what would you say to somebody, to our listeners who are listening and they're like questioning, maybe they're thinking, well, how do I know if I'm sleeping well? How do I know? Like, I feel like I'm functioning in the morning, but it goes back to the distinction between what you were saying between being able to function and like optimally functioning. So for those people who have that question, what advice or what would you say to them to help them try to figure out, are they optimally functioning, like optimally sleeping, or is there room? Well, I'm sure there's room for improvement for most people, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are the parameters they should look at?
There is probably room for improvement with everything. I mean, really with everything, right? With exercise, right? Nutrition and sleep, yeah. There's always room for improvement, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, I think it really depends on your symptoms, I would say. You know, I like to ask people, are you sleepy or is it something else? Is there something else going on? You know, if you sleep, let's just say 7 hours and you feel totally normal the next day, I would assume that you have good sleep. I know it sounds kind of silly, but again, it is very subjective. Now, on the other hand, if you're in bed for a full 8 hours and you wake up exhausted and you're falling asleep at a stoplight, then we need to look into it. There are a ton of wearables. People are always asking me about these wearables. I usually have like at least one on, but there's the Oura Ring, which has a ton of marketing out there. It's actually a really great device for sleep. They're, you know, the Fitbit, the Apple Watch, all of these things see what your sleep is. And so those are a good way to really know basically when you're falling asleep and waking up. If that all seems like trending the same, then I would say that there's really nothing to worry about. But if you have a lot of variation, if you get some alerts, if you just don't feel well, or if your partner tells you that you are waking up a lot, I would listen to them.
Yeah.
If it's impacting the quality of your life, especially nowadays, like with sleeplessness and insomnia being so common, if it's affecting the quality of your life, I would pretty much always talk to a professional about that.
So let's ask the important question here. Let's say somebody knows that they're not getting sleep, whether it's because they tracked it on some sort of device, they're exhausted, their partner is telling them, whatever it is. And they come to you and they say, Teresa, I cannot sleep. Fix me. What are, let's say, like 3 to 5 or 6 things that you would tell them? Like, what's the low-hanging fruit that you want people to be thinking about? And before you can move on to kind of the bigger items or saying whether or not they've got a sleep disorder, like, hey, let's look at these things and optimize them first. What are those things?
I love that. And actually, I think just because of my background, I would sort of switch it even. Or we do typically, again, we're thinking, are you sleepy or is it something else? Is it your habits? Is it your mindset? Or is there something that even if we fix this, it's not going to be totally fixed because you have a sleep disorder? You know, if you're completely exhausted or if you have some other symptoms like getting up to go to the bathroom a bunch of times in the night or snoring, I'm going to immediately recommend that you get a sleep test. So at the same time as you getting your sleep test or getting your results or talking to a doctor, then we can also work on these sleep hygiene tips, which is, you know, the 3, 4, 5 tips that you want to work on. So for everybody, whether you have a sleep disorder or not, sleep hygiene can improve your sleep and your mindset. These include things like your use of light, which I am probably talking about all the time. I just think it's like the easiest, free, best hack out there to use light to your advantage. You know, if you wake up and get natural light as soon as possible, if you exercise during the day, if you dim your lights and minimize light at night, those things can help sleep and it can help pretty much everybody. There is tons and tons of data on that. It's just, it's not disputed at all. I would say that, well, I mean, it's just so much about your habits, really. Even breathing too, I think is something that is a little bit underrated. So if we want to talk about something that will apply to everybody and help everybody, your breathing is one of those things that can help calm your nervous system, but can also help you get better sleep, which sort of then relates back to if you have sleep apnea or if you're snoring, then you're not breathing right. And we're going to fix that anyway. Deep, slow, intentional nasal breathing is really important. Nasal breathing is important for when we're awake and when we're asleep. So if you can't do that, we're going to start working on that right away. And even just to calm you at night or when you wake up in the middle of the night, you know, we can recommend some breathing exercises. So those would definitely be the things that I pretty much tell everybody, no matter what their problem is, no matter even if they have a sleep disorder or not.
So waking up and getting natural sunlight as soon as possible. We've talked about this a little bit in our circadian rhythm episodes, right, Meg? So this is not the first time you guys are hearing this. And then minimizing light at all. Teresa, do you use
like the blue light glasses?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm doing this.
I saw the motion.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Do you do those? Like, these are kind of that. I use them sometimes when I'm in front of a screen. But do you recommend? I know I've seen some people will wear them after a certain hour, even at home, just walking around, making dinner, watching TV, so that it doesn't impact their sleep. Is that something that you see is helpful or recommend or? What's your experience there?
I use them sometimes, especially when I have like a long day in front of the computer because I feel like it can't hurt. Blue light is thought to diminish melatonin production, which of course affects our sleep. But I'd say really more important than the color of the light is the brightness of the light. So no matter what, bright light at nighttime is not good for our melatonin production. Now, if you are, you know, one of those persons who are like a biohacker or you're trying new things all the time and you're very into that lifestyle, then I would say, yeah, definitely go for it. But if you are someone who's like more on the anxious side, I really try to stay away from a lot of products and things like that, because then you sort of get dependent on it and you get nervous if you don't have it. It can absolutely help, but it's also, you know, it is sort of a marketing thing, I believe. You know, we haven't seen
that is a really
some research. Yeah, we have some seen some research lately that shows that all these studies that we saw on blue light, like some people are saying, well, actually, if you really look at the data, it doesn't prove that it's that harmful. Like, it's kind of harmful, but so yeah, if you have it, wear it. I wear them if I'm having a long day or if I'm like working late at night, even though I'm not supposed to. But for the most part, you just want to make sure. Wow, nice. You just want to make sure there's like not a lot of bright light.
Bright light. Okay. That's really, really good. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm thinking of like a bunch of mood lighting at home, you know, for the evening.
Yeah, definitely. Right. It's like ambiance and like sleep hygiene.
There yeah. you go, people. That's your argument for getting the mood lighting. It's for my sleep, honey.
It's healthy for us, I promise.
It will help us too. This is the key. Okay. I would love to ask a few questions about specifically some of the sleep disorders. Before we do that, though, I have a selfish question about talking in your sleep. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you can tell us anything about that, mostly because I know when I was little, I used to talk in my sleep a lot. I would yell at my sisters a lot. But okay. recently, good. Brian has been saying, like, you were very chatty last night. I'm not sure what you were saying.
Oh, but my goodness.
I've moved out to the couch because you would not stop talking. And I don't know if this falls under sleep hygiene, sleep disorders, or if it's kind of a category its own. But I'm curious if there's anything that you can share with us about what that is or where it comes from or what to tell your partner.
Mm-hmm. Please help me. What do I tell my partner? I see what you're saying. I mean, there are some variations here. So talking in your sleep is typically harmless. You know, it's not very common. As we get older, it becomes less and less common. Children are a lot more likely to do this. It's typically harmless. What you might notice, I don't know if you would tell your partner this because he'll be like, I told you so. But what you might notice is that it might get worse during stressful situations or with caffeine use. Some people actually have reactions to like certain foods, specifically dairy seems to be reactive in some way. And that's because it falls in line with something called a parasomnia. So sleepwalking is a parasomnia. Talking in your sleep is a parasomnia. Fighting people in your sleep is that as well. And so if it happens like every now and then, it's pretty harmless. If it's happening more often or if it is accompanied by like actions, I would definitely get that checked out because, you know, it's kind of a safety issue, honestly. It typically happens.
Kylie just clocking Brian in the face in her sleep.
She's like, you know what? Maybe you can use this as an excuse, though, too. You're like, ooh, sorry, I was sleeping.
I swear I didn't mean it. Oh,
Brian, you didn't do the dishes. Clack.
Yeah, it's totally normal.
The funny thing is, it doesn't bother me at all. Like, I don't wake up feeling unrested or like I was disturbed at all. So it is one of those things that the dynamic is pretty funny because it doesn't bother me at all. You know, it's so true.
Like, I'm fine.
It's harmless, right? Like I feel just fine until I wake up and I'm like, huh, I wonder where he went.
Oh my gosh.
I peaced out 2 hours ago.
Especially because it seems like you have a pretty healthy lifestyle too. So it would be interesting to see if it's like a certain food or like alcohol or sugar that triggers that.
Or maybe stress that yeah. is stress. Right.
Yeah. I feel like stress can be the cause of like stress and sleep are the cause of like so many issues.
it could be
that.
Yeah.
If someone listening has that and it's like affecting their life, if they are also moving in their sleep or it's happening like almost every night, I absolutely see a doctor for that. Sometimes it's sort of a side effect of other conditions or another sleep disorder or post-traumatic stress disorder or something like that, which sounds scary, but all of those things can be treated. And so definitely get that looked at.
So then, okay, what is the most common sleep or the top kind of common sleep disorders that you see and work with? And maybe share with us a little bit about why someone would be experiencing that and the steps when you say we need to fix that, we're going to fix that. What is that process actually looking like?
Perfect. So the most common sleep issues and sleep disorders would definitely be insomnia and obstructive sleep apnea. And unfortunately for some people, sometimes it happens at the same time that you have both of those.
Oh, no.
You know, I feel like we throw around the word insomnia a lot. You know, it's all over the internet. Sometimes people, they'll say it's insomnia with a capital I or an insomnia with a lowercase I. And it sort of means like, is it just, you know, a bout of sleeplessness? You know, everybody has a few bad nights. Everybody has acute insomnia or transient insomnia when you have like, unfortunately, like a death in the family or just a really stressful time or you're sleeping in a new house or whatever. Like that's totally normal. But when it's happening more than 3 times a week for more than 3 months, then we would say that you most likely have insomnia, which is a condition that needs to be treated.
And can you just briefly, I'm sorry for interrupting, explain to us what is insomnia? Because I think we all hear this term, and to your point, people will use it sort of loosely. Like, yeah. Oh, I couldn't sleep last night, I had insomnia. But what is it actually to be diagnosed with insomnia?
That's such a great question. And it's kind of like not a trick question, but I listened to Dr. Chris Winter. He has a podcast. He's a good friend. He's been on Instagram with me a few times. And he really always drives home like the semantics of this. Like insomnia is not that you can't sleep. We all sleep. Like you said before, like we need to sleep. All humans sleep, even if you're not good at it. So insomnia really is that part where you're not so good at it. So it could mean that you're having trouble falling asleep or that you wake up in the middle of the night, or even maybe that you wake up too early in the morning, which really relates more back to like a circadian rhythm disorder. But it can be really any trouble with sleep that lasts for a long time that is impacting your quality of life. So it's basically excessive sleeplessness, I would say.
Mm. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Excessive sleeplessness. So describing it more by the lack of what it is.
Yeah.
Then, yes. Okay. So even people who have insomnia are typically getting some sleep at some point, even if it's very difficult or clunky to fall and stay asleep, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that you said that because that actually is super important for insomniacs to remember. You know, especially when you're really tired, you get so stressed and you're like kind of anxious in the middle of the night. And you're like, oh my God, I'm not sleeping at all. But, you know, I actually did this the other night because I had a little too much alcohol. I didn't sleep very well. I was like, oh my God, I'm not sleeping. This is so hard. I'm going to be so like groggy tomorrow. But then I looked at the clock and it had been like 3 hours. Like I did actually sleep. I just didn't sleep a lot. So we can try to remember that when we're having those bouts of insomnia, that even though it is really hard and it is, you know, a legitimate issue, we are still sleeping some. It's just not the way we want it to be.
That's nice.
I feel like that's really nice. Comforting to know.
Yes.
Like really comforting to just remember, like, because you're right, there is such a stress factor when you're awake, you know, when you wake up in the middle of the night and maybe you have a big day the next day, or you even just something as
yes.
work, and you're like, oh, how am I going to make it through the day? And it's like, oh, your body's going to do what it has to do to an
yeah,
extent.
You're like, actually,
it's
just, I will be fine.
yeah. That's really comforting. And you've alluded to some of the reasons why people might be experiencing insomnia. You mentioned alcohol, you mentioned caffeine. We've talked about that. Outside of the things that we've mentioned so far, are there any other major common reasons that people might experience the type of insomnia that we started talking about, meaning like it's a longer term, not just like an acute situation, but a longer term type of insomnia?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that we used to categorize insomnia as being like a secondary disorder. Like you have anxiety, which causes your insomnia, or you have depression, which causes your insomnia. You are on medication, which causes insomnia. Unfortunately, a lot of medications do, because they're, you know, interacting with the chemistry of your body. They do have a side effect, which is sleeplessness. But there are some people who actually just have it as a primary condition. There might not really be any rhyme or reason for it, but it sort of perpetuates itself. You know, once you start not sleeping well, your brain sort of starts making these associations like, okay, well, we don't really sleep that well. We don't sleep at this hour. We always wake up at that hour. So that can really last a long time. And I think that people sort of just think it's normal or they get used to it. Humans are so resilient, and it can be actually pretty detrimental for us because we don't get help for it. But there's so many things that you can do aside from just those sleep hygiene habits. I think a lot of people avoid it because they don't want to be on pills, but pills is not even the most effective way to treat insomnia. It's actually behavioral therapy. So all these people who don't want to be on pills, or if they're on sleeping pills and their doctor has prescribed or is recommended, it's really not even the most effective thing for it.
What is?
That's a great segue, because I know we wanted to ask you about this, and I know we have other sleep disorders specifically to get to, but it's a good place to start. We can just do it with all of them, I guess, or the ones that we talk about. What is the most effective?
Here's the big surprise. The big surprise is that it's actually behavioral therapy. It's something called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia.
That's
so it's
cool.
Really about mindset and habits. And of course, you know, there is a method to it. There are sleep psychologists. A lot of people don't even know that sleep psychologists exist, but they do.
I didn't.
There you go. People who are board certified in this. There are also some apps and programs. You know, we use principles of CBTI in our online programs. And it's almost too obvious, and I think truly underrated, you know, the mindset thing and you know, self-talk. And like you just said before, it was comforting to just remember that you can sleep even if you feel like you're not sleeping. But when you're working with somebody who's trained in this, it has much longer lasting effects versus if you take a pill. Sure, they do the job. I mean, they're made to knock you out, but there are no sleeping pills on the market unless something has changed in the last few months and I don't know about. There are no sleeping pills on the market that are made for long-term use. None of them induce natural sleep. They just knock you out. So if you need that, sure. If you're grieving, if you have something that is just making you crazy and you need to sleep, you know what, obviously talk to your doctor about that. But if you really want a long-term solution, if you really want to feel better, then you need to work on your habits and potentially do cognitive behavioral therapy.
And just briefly, can you tell us, those who don't know, what is CBT? Like, what is it? What does it involve? I think maybe some don't know what that is. Don't even know all what it is. It's like, I think of it as like a form of talk therapy, but there's much more to it, you know, so mm-hmm. Please tell us.
Yeah. And you can do it in, again, with a psychologist, with a doctor, which is a form of talk therapy, but you can do it on your own too. And even if you're working with a doctor, they'll sort of give you like homework, for lack of a better word, you know, things to try, you know, different exercises, different mindset tricks, sort of like reframing. There are ways to, there's like sleep restriction therapy, which sounds counterintuitive, but it basically means that you like spend less time sleeping, trying to like program your body to feel awake and asleep when you need to. There's something called the CBT triangle, and this would be for cognitive behavioral therapy, which is kind of a broad term for a lot of, well, behavioral therapy. But specific to insomnia, and this triangle is, your thoughts are at the one tip. It's, you know, you have to remember that what you think affects how you feel and the way you act. At the other side of the triangle is your behaviors. What you do affects how you think and you feel. And then the other side is your emotions. What you feel is affecting how you think and act. So that's a triangle, but it's really more of a cycle. So in recognizing this and identifying it and then working through those thoughts and behaviors and emotions, it helps you get through cognitive behavioral therapy.
That is really helpful. I'm thinking of almost like thinking of like an assembly line sort of, and like you're identifying where the broken link is in the assembly line and like fixing that so that the rest of the things work properly, like down the, that's how I'm thinking of it. But
yeah, and you can start with one thing at a time, right? And then go back through that assembly line. Like once you have the tools and you figure out how like your brain is making up these stories, and once you figure out where those are and you kind of fix that, then you can go back and do it again with the next thought and the next action.
And you have that incorporated in your online course, I think, right?
We are not psychologists, but we do have some on our advisory panel. We use some of the techniques without offering the talk therapy portion. We'll give you some exercises and Actually, I think we have that CBT triangle in, you know, one of our PDFs that you can download.
Cool.
So definitely take a look at that.
Awesome.
And I just gave like a ton of information, and get me on my soapbox. I will just never stop talking about it.
No, it's great. No, it's great. Kylie, what's the next disorder you had questions about?
Well, I think the better question is to see, and I think you mentioned what insomnia, and what was the other one that you said you see?
Oh, and obstructive sleep apnea.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay.
Yeah. I would explain what that is. Yeah. And maybe some questions that if people are wondering, oh man, is that what I have? Like, what are some things that they can ask themselves in order to get to the correct kind of conclusion? Or does it need to be actually, there's a specific test that you have to get in order to receive this diagnosis? So share a little bit about what it is, how you get diagnosed, how you might even question if you need to be diagnosed, and ultimately, like, what the hell to do?
Perfect. Yeah.
I'll tell you, you kick your husband out who's in of your bed.
First, kick out your husband.
No, no, I'm teasing. Jason has sleep apnea and we struggled with it for a while. So that's why I said that.
Oh, anyway. My goodness. Is he treated now or did you kick him out or both?
No. Well, I kicked him out for a long time because, as you mentioned, it took him a while to feel comfortable with getting help. I think because he didn't realize he had this is something, you know what, for him, he's never had a good night of sleep. That's what it was.
Right. So and he didn't
know.
It, right?
Yeah. He didn't know that he wasn't sleeping well. And then when he got his CPAP machine, now he knows. He's like, oh, I can't sleep without the CPAP because he knows the difference now.
I love that. That's sort of a layup too. And it goes back to what, you know, we were talking about before, like people get used to it.
Yeah.
Our bar is so low for the way we think we should feel.
Yes.
And so a lot of people don't get help because they're like, oh, this is normal. But then they do get help, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my God, my life has changed.
And it did. It did. So go on. Please,
oh, that's amazing.
Tell the world.
Okay. So as you know, Meg, sleep apnea is when your airway restricts or closes over and over again during sleep. And that sounds very scary, but it's actually incredibly common. In some demographics, 1 in 5 people have this. So it's
so
likely that,
common.
Well, we all know someone. Obviously, you know someone.
Yep.
Every single person knows somebody. Someone listening is probably that somebody. It's so, so common. We sort of have this stereotype of an older, overweight man who's snoring like on their recliner.
100%.
Yeah. And that
not
is...
Not Jason. He's not the person that I think of.
When quickly Googling what Jason looks like.
Oh my God. When you said that, I did actually picture Jason in like 50 years on the recliner with a beard snoring.
That I would imagine. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it certainly does get worse with age and with weight. But anybody can have it. And some of the tests and some of the signs and symptoms are sort of skewed to fit that stereotype, but that doesn't mean that other people can't have it. It's just the most common way, because when your airway is restricted at night, it can be due to gravity, honestly. Like if you have a lot of weight in your neck, then it's going to press on your airway and close easier if you are overweight.
Whoa.
I mean, we see this sometimes with pregnant women too, just from the, you know, the body changes and the pressure can actually help restrict the airway in addition to all those crazy hormones. But some really common signs of sleep apnea are, number one, snoring. Not everybody who has sleep apnea snores, which can actually be pretty difficult when you don't have that one to really think that that could be your problem. We see this so much in women. About 90% of women who have sleep apnea are not diagnosed. So,
wow.
I mean, it's shocking. It's incredible because we have these things, you know, we think, oh, snoring, overweight man, older than 50. And we're like, okay, well, cross that off the list. It's not me. It's not my sister, but it can be.
Oh my gosh.
If we're thinking about, you know, why sleep apnea happens, again, it's that narrowing or the blockage of the airway. And if you have a smaller jaw, a smaller face, you will have a smaller airway. And so even the tiniest bit of restriction can block that airway, can cause apneic events, as it's called, when you stop breathing. Or even, you know, somebody explained it to me one time as breathing through a straw. So let's say that maybe your airway doesn't close all the way. Maybe you're not snoring, but if you're breathing through like a coffee straw, that's really hard, right? That's really hard on your body. So if you are one of these women, especially who, you know, you don't think you have those symptoms, but you might, you know, at some point be diagnosed with sleep apnea, that's why it's still not good for your body to not be getting enough oxygen. So usually when you have this, you might feel excessively sleepy during the day. Like I said before, you know, you get to a stoplight and you can barely keep your eyes open. If you can nap at any hour of the day, if you fall asleep immediately, we often think that's like, oh, you're a great sleeper, but it could actually be a sign of sleep deprivation or sleep apnea. People who get up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom a lot, we actually see that this is kind of like a secondary response to your body waking up because of sleep apnea and going to the bathroom. So like if you don't have a prostate issue or you don't have a bladder issue, if you are getting up multiple times to use the bathroom, I tell people this all the time. They're like, oh no, it's just because of my age or it's just because of, you know, certain hormones. I'm like, I'm not sure. I think you should get tested for sleep apnea. Mm.
What does that test look like?
Yeah.
There are two different tests that you can do. Some people think about sleep testing, and it's another reason that people don't do it as polysomnography, which is when you get all these plugs all over your face and your body and you go into a lab and you try to sleep and people like watch you, which is the gold standard. It's obviously very effective. If you have, you know, like a cardiac or a pulmonary issue, that we would definitely always recommend that. But for the most part, a lot of people, you know, people like us, a lot of people can get a home sleep test, which is a small device that's shipped to your home. You know, there's different versions, but sometimes they go on your finger or your wrist. Maybe they strap across your chest and nobody's watching you. You wear it like one or two nights. It will measure your breathing, your heart rate, your respiratory effort, maybe your brain waves if you have a certain kind of device. And then that information will be able to be evaluated and we'll know for sure if you have sleep apnea.
I did not know that. That's really, really good to know. Because that was, for Jason, that was like a big reason that took him so long is because you have to go and sleep in this lab overnight. And it's just like a big to-do, you know?
Yeah, I know. And it's kind of ironic, right? They're like, they plug you in and they watch you from the other room. They're like, go to sleep. And you're like,
yeah, I can't sleep. Yeah.
Yes, but especially now, and especially after the pandemic, and especially because everybody, you know, is doing everything virtual. It's so, so common. And it's covered by almost every, I won't say every, but like most insurances to just do it at home. So anybody listening, definitely think about that.
Wow.
I want to lastly ask about snoring. Mm. Such a common thing. And so many people experience it either because they know that they snore or they are around somebody who snores. What is it? And is it a sign that that person is not sleeping well or that they could be sleeping better? Or is it a sign of something bigger? Or is it just nothing to worry about?
Oh, there's a lot of answers for that. So in children, it's the easiest because it's not normal and you need to see a doctor.
Children,
yeah. Children, you know, they were just made. They're brand new humans. They should have perfect anatomy. And if their anatomy is causing them to snore, then we need to fix that. Typically, snoring would mean that the soft tissues in the back of your airway are vibrating and making a noise. And if they're vibrating over your airway, then that would imply that they're blocking your airway in some way. And, you know, as a growing child, especially, the last thing we want is reduced airflow.
Yeah.
So in children, it's pretty much always a problem.
Wow.
Okay.
If you are sick, you're congested, if you've had too much to drink, I know that I tend to mouth breathe and snore a little. These are all pretty.
Snores.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I'm like, I'm a perfect sleeper. And then like, I have 3 glasses of wine and forget it. But the point is, it's pretty normal. Again, it is blocking your airway a little bit. And it's a sign that I did something else to cause that. But if it happens every now and then, you're totally fine. But if it's because you're sick or, you know, you're not breathing through your nose, that goes back to what we were saying before about breath. You need to be able to breathe through your nose to sleep well. So that's pretty important. And if you don't, then maybe you're snoring. There is a small percentage of people that have something called primary snoring. This means that it literally is just a noise that happens and you're not having any other conditions or side effects, it's possible. It's just kind of unlikely.
So if you snore, if you are a person who snores most nights, like most nights you have somebody kind of like shaking you, hey, you're snoring, wake up. What would you tell that person to think about doing or asking or looking into?
I would think about, first, is it affecting them? I mean, first of all, if it's affecting their partner, that's still pretty important because that partner is waking up and their sleep is disrupted.
Right.
And then even that person who thinks that it's not affecting them, are they being woken up? Are they getting an elbow to the stomach every night? Like that's affecting them too. I would say that typically people tend to snore more or have apnea when they're laying on their back, again, because of that gravity that's like pushing your neck down. So sleeping on your side is helpful. Making sure that you can breathe through your nose. Maybe some people use, nasal spray every now and then is totally fine, or a nasal strip. There are things called mutes that I think are really helpful. You see them all the time in the drugstore. Those can be super helpful. I would not ever on any condition recommend a mouth guard from a drugstore for snoring. They are bulky, uncomfortable. They barely ever work. They can move your teeth. But from the drugstore, you can get like nasal dilators or strips or sprays. That can be helpful. Reducing your alcohol, reducing your allergens.
What about mouth taping?
Mouth taping can be super helpful. Now, if you're snoring, this is where things get tricky. So mouth taping is super helpful because it encourages nasal breathing, which I feel like I probably said it like 15 times. That was so incredibly important. If you're snoring and you use mouth tape and everything's fine, then you're probably fine. But it would be pretty hard to know how okay you really are during sleep without a sleep test. Now, if you use mouth tape and you find that you're like kind of startled or you're waking up and you're ripping it off or you feel like claustrophobic, that could be a sign that your airway has closed, which would indicate that you might have sleep apnea. So I would probably, if you are snoring, I would probably recommend a sleep test over mouth taping or, you know, after you're being treated. You know, some people with CPAP use mouth tape on top of that. That's fine.
Actually, that reminds me, I just want to circle back real quick to sleep apnea. If somebody gets this diagnosis, okay, they went to the testing, they did a home test, whatever it was, what is the, is there a solution, a treatment, a tool? What does somebody do? We forgot to
talk. Yeah, that's super important. Just like insomnia and sleep apnea, like people don't want to get tested because they're like, well, then what? Or, you know, CPAP is super effective. It is like a mask with a hose that goes onto your face and helps blow air so that it keeps your airway open. But even though it's incredibly effective, a lot of people have a hard time getting used to it. A lot of people don't like it. There's a huge recall on millions and millions of devices right now. And so even if you wanted to get it, sometimes you can't. So it's important to know that there's other options too. There are dental devices made by sleep dentists who can help keep your airway open at night. You just wear it in your mouth at night, sort of like, well, like any other mouth guard, but it's custom. So it's fit to your mouth. It's not bulky and uncomfortable. There are surgeries. Obviously that's going to be a lot more invasive, but surgery does tend to be very effective. And there's also a new daytime therapy called Excite, it stimulates your airway muscles, specifically your tongue, and actually helps to strengthen it. So it stays out of the way of your airway. And that has been surprisingly effective as well.
Is that something that people can do at home or they have to go into an office or I imagine they have to be, go ahead.
After you're diagnosed, you would get prescribed CPAP, or you would get prescribed oral appliance therapy, or you would be prescribed Excite, which is that device. That is a brand name, but there's no other ones out there. So, you would get prescribed that. It's like a small device that you ship to your home. It kind of looks like a U-shape, you put it on your tongue and just like a little candle, and you do it at home for like 20 minutes a day. You just have to use it almost every day.
That's so cool.
That's really interesting. And I can see how that would be a really attractive option for people who, first of all, if I was even questioning if I had sleep apnea, I imagine that I would completely ignore that. Because the idea of being told, honestly, I think I speak for, I mean, the idea of, I mean, Jason had this experience being told, here's a giant mask mm-hmm. that you need to take with you should you sleep outside your home, and yeah. wear everywhere is the least appealing, least attractive, mm-hmm. least sexy thing ever. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that alone, as sort of the usual answer to this problem, would prevent me from wanting to know if I had the problem. So knowing that something like this that you could just do at home for 20 minutes would be an option, I hope people listening are understanding that that might be something that you could do instead. So if you do think that you're having a hard time sleeping, or somebody has said to you in the past, you should really consider getting tested for this, mm-hmm. There you go. That could be a win for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, going back to, like, I think especially for women, we get tested less. We think we have it yeah. less. We get treated less. But if we know we have these options, it kind of allows you to, like, take control of your health
yeah.
and do something about it. I think that's a really great option. Now, again, it does have to be prescribed. So if your doctor doesn't think that it's appropriate for you, you know, listen to them. But you should ask about it, definitely.
Yeah. I love the access, like you were saying. It's just like, women, now that we know that women are less likely to be diagnosed, you can be your own advocate to at least ask for these things, and they're way more accessible than it used to be. Like, the only option of going in to do a sleep test is now not the only option, or combining cognitive behavioral therapy with whatever option your doctor thinks is best for you, that's also really cool. So this episode has been so, like, filled with little gems. Thank you so much.
Well, I hope so. I feel like I'm just, like, talking and talking. I just feel like when you think about sleep, you're thinking about, like, sleeping pills and melatonin supplements, but there's just so much more. And there's just, I mean, there's obviously a ton of information, but there's so much more that you can do, and you don't have to, you know, just randomly get some prescription and, like, hate your life about it.
Yeah. And so you have a very fun quiz on your website. I love the name of it. It was Are You Sleepy or Something Else, right? Is that what mm-hmm. what's the yeah. name of the mm-hmm. quiz?
Yep, Sleepy or Something Else.
Yeah. So people can go there and they can take this quiz, and from those results, it'll help them kind of shuffle into where they should start based on mm-hmm. the results of those quizzes, that quiz. Is that right?
Yes, definitely. So we took questions from clinically validated questionnaires.
Good to know.
And it's sort of like a mini screener. At the yeah. end, I am going to recommend one of the three courses that I have. But right. if you do take that quiz, whether you buy that course or not, you'll see at the bottom, it will say, it's very likely that you have, you know, sleep apnea, talk to your doctor. Or it doesn't seem like you have insomnia. This looks like a habits thing. Maybe you try these things first before you talk to your doctor. So just to get you in the right direction, or even just thinking about, you know, when I'm asking you these questions, you might think, well, why is she asking me about, I don't know, how sleepy I am during the day, or what time I wake up in the morning, or when I use my phone? But it is all related to, you know, getting better.
Oh my gosh. Well, cool.
Oh, man. Awesome. Teresa.
Listen,
I feel like we have a million other things that we could talk about. We didn't even talk about melatonin.
I know. We got to do a part two.
A million other things.
We can do a part two.
I do think that this is a really, Meg, just like you were saying, it's a great starting point. And I think it is very encouraging for people. You know,
yeah.
ask yourself these questions that maybe you were a little nervous about exploring, and know that there are a lot of other options that are going to maybe be a better fit.
Yeah.
And instead of continuing to suffer or potentially put yourself in a dangerous position, you know.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. Teresa, tell people how they can find you and where you are on Instagram. And other than the quiz, if there's somewhere that you want them to take a look at things.
Thanks. Yeah, definitely Instagram. It's where I'm putting all my tips and tricks and ridiculous reels. That, you know,
I love your reels. They're very fun.
Oh, thank you. I love hate them, but my Instagram is sleepbetterNYC, no spaces or dots or anything like that. On my Instagram, you'll see I have a bunch of highlights. I also actually, well, it depends when this is out, but I will have the programs and a special all through the month of November, or if you click the link in my bio, everything is there. I like to be very redundant. Definitely start by taking that quiz, because that's, again, it will just give you, like, a starting point, where to look first. And then if you want to check out my website, it's www.sleepbetter.nyc. So it's not .com. And there you can find information about me or the programs that we have, or just send in a questionnaire or whatever you want there.
Awesome. And all of that info will be in the show notes, so our listeners can head on over there and get those links. And thank you so much, Teresa. I'm so excited that we got a chance to sit down with you. And I'm really thankful for all the gems of knowledge that you gave to us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Curious Women. If you love our show, you can support us by leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And if you know someone else who would really love our show, please share it with them too.